What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Strantz. He covers the Canucks. Also for The Athletic, we're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Big, big show coming up today. Harmon Dial, also from The Athletic, he'll join us at 1. But before that, man, we have a lot to digest from the second half of Canucks year-end media availability. Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford speaking earlier today at Rogers Arena.
I thought it was a pretty fascinating availability. There's a lot of stuff in there that I think we expected. Maybe some things that were a little bit more surprising.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for example, okay, at the very top of the availability, Rutherford opens it with a statement. And he says the following. We had a very disappointing season that we feel bad about.
Mm-hmm.
We started the season as what a lot of people would view the Canucks as a contending team. We ran into an unfortunate incident early in the season that hurt the chemistry of our team. We ultimately had to make a trade that we didn't expect to make and didn't want to make, so we went from being a contending team to being a team in transition. Now, in some ways, none of that is that surprising to our listeners. Maybe the use of the word incident.
That was interesting. That did get followed up on.
It had to be. But we've been talking about this for months, Jamie, and a lot of that matches what we've been saying,
mm-hmm.
what we've been hearing, what I've been reporting at The Athletic, and sets the terms of what our discussion is. So regular Canucks Talk listeners would not, I think, have heard that statement and been like, whoa. But man, does it sound a lot different coming from the president of hockey operations, right? Like, this season went so badly because of locker room dysfunction among our core group that we have entered a new phase in our team building project. Not only did we not meet expectations, but we are...
It shifted the course of the franchise.
We are sifting through the fallout of that as we enter this season.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that really did set the terms for what we heard, because there are so many hot buttons surrounding this team right now.
Let's handle it in the whiteboard. Let's go to the whiteboard right now.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks, and of course, starting with the headlines, which is that we did hear from General Manager Patrick Alvin and President of Hockey Ops Jim Rutherford less than a couple of hours ago at Rogers Arena. And as you said, to kind of bridge this back to what we were talking about on Friday, one of our takeaways on Friday when we heard from Rick Tocchet and the players was this sense of an unsettled situation around the team.
People were really mad at us.
What else is new? A lot of unsettled situations around the Vancouver Canucks, and we can run through them kind of bullet point here. We can dive into some of them. I mean, we've got a lot of time to cover here in the show.
But I want to start with a big picture takeaway, and then let's get in the micro.
Sure.
There are a lot of hot button issues. A lot of, I don't know, do you want to say fires burning around the club?
I don't know if I would say fires as
choppy
much as like
waters that they're steering into.
Major decisions, or major, not even decisions necessarily, but like major pivot points. You know what I mean? Like, because the coach, and we'll get into this, that's out of their hands at this point.
Yes.
So it's not a decision so much as it is a pivotal moment.
Mm-hmm. So is the Hughes one. So is the Pettersson one in some ways, although they have more control there because the player is signed. The Demko one, the Garland one, the we need to trade for a center one, the we don't like the options in free agency. I mean, I don't think fires is too much, man. There are a lot of like smoldering situations surrounding the club that the club's going to have to navigate expertly. There is a very narrow path here, right? One that may already be fundamentally compromised as a result of the JT Miller trade,
mm-hmm.
right? This club had already been on a narrow path. That path may already be compromised as a result of how this season played out and the Miller trade in particular. And boy, oh boy, is management ever going to have to be careful about where their next sort of step falls if they're going to make this work. And I just thought there was no mincing of words, no minimizing the stakes, right? No self-interested gaslighting of the fan base about, you know, wow, we're really excited about Lekkerimäki, or, you know, like, they did not point to flimsy, false things to be hopeful about. They leveled with the fan base about the magnitude of the task at hand. And I thought that was a really fascinating window into just how critical this offseason is going to be, you know, for this franchise.
And there was a couple of points in particular where they did not shy away from kind of the dire consequences if they don't get things right. And we can talk about them more later, but one was obviously Quinn Hughes and his future with the team. The other one was the pursuit of an upgrade down the middle. I think the exact phrase Jim Rutherford used there was, yeah, it's going to be expensive to get one, but it's going to be really expensive not to get. It's going to be very costly not to get one as well, which is a kind of classic Jim Rutherford way of looking at the situation, I think. Recognizing, yeah, sometimes you have to pay big prices in order to get the player your team so desperately needs. But we can save that conversation a little bit for later, because let's kind of go through. And I think the biggest concrete news item from today was Jim Rutherford saying, very directly and explicitly, we will not exercise our team option on Rick Tocchet. We're having these negotiations with him. He reiterated what we've heard Elliot Friedman report, which is they've gone to, in their offers, to a salary place that the Canucks have never gone with a head coach before. But basically, the takeaway here is the ball is in Rick Tocchet's court, right? That's what that means. If you're not exercising the team option to bring him back for next year and you're publicly backing away from that, Rick Tocchet gets to control his future. It's up to Rick Tocchet now if he's going to be the coach of this team or if he's going to pursue other coaching options in the NHL if the Canucks aren't going to hold him to that option. You know, they also said they expect a decision this week. I know Satyar Shah on Halford and Brough earlier this morning mentioned that Tocchet's out of town right now. He's already left town. I don't know if that plays any sort of role.
No, so let me jump in here.
Go ahead.
Tocchet did leave town following the season, but he will be back. He's scheduled to be back this week, later this week.
All right.
So, you know, honestly, it's a really fascinating one, because if you parse the words, I think it gives you a lot of fodder for speculation, right? Mm-hmm. It's been a really good dialogue, Rutherford said of the club's recent discussions with Tocchet. We will not exercise the team option for him to stay. We don't feel it's right to have somebody here who may have his mind somewhere else. And I'd say that for just about anybody. Okay, well, congratulations, you know, to the Athletic colleague Kevin Kurz in Philadelphia and Larry Brooks at the New York Post. Yes. And Arthur Staple and Peter Baugh, because, you know, you want to localize this story. You've got your invitation from no less than the Canucks president. And yet, I think there's a lot there that in some ways makes me feel a lot better today about the Canucks' opportunity to retain Tocchet than I did on Friday when Tocchet spoke in advance and without management. And here's sort of my logic for this. I thought the defense of Tocchet's coaching performance this season, despite the middling record, saying that he thought Tocchet did just as good a job, if not better, than when he won the Jack Adams, had a 109-point team, won the Pacific, advanced to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I thought that was a strong moment, right? A moment where, like, there's no negotiating through the press for Rutherford here. There's no secret. We want you.
Yeah.
You're a priority. We see the work you did this year. We see your value. I thought that was a very auspicious sign, just a full-throated defense of the coach's record. And I actually think backing away from negotiating bluster on the subject of the option, to me, that speaks to a cooperative conversation. Like, that to me is something you do if you feel pretty good.
If you've found some common ground in the course of your negotiations.
If you feel pretty good.
That suggests that it hasn't been like a sharp elbows negotiation between the two sides.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
There's no need to throw the barbs.
Yeah.
So, look, we'll see, right? At the end of the day, you know, there's a timeline here. We expect a decision one way or the other this week. And I just think the cooling off of the club's stance here, I find it difficult to read that as anything but subtle progress, even if it is underlined by uncertain verbiage from the Canucks president.
Yeah, and again, very much putting the ball in his court, and that is a big change here, right? So I think you're right that there are reasons to be positive about it, but it's also, as we were saying off the top of the show, it's kind of out of their hands now. They've made their pitch, they've made their offer, they've had the dialogue, and Tocchet, as we heard a couple of times, is going to go through his process. We'll see how long that lasts. Rutherford did say they expect to get his answer by the end of the week. So expect some clarity one way or another on the Canucks coaching situation, or at least, I guess, whether there's a vacancy or not. On the Canucks coaching situation by the end of the week, but ball very much in Rick Tocchet's court right now. The other, and I don't know if it was like concrete news necessarily, but the other kind of newsy thing I think was probably on Tom Volander.
I wouldn't say that was news. I would say that was deeply confusing.
It was, but it sounded like news, but it might not be. You know what I mean? So what Patrick Alvin had to say, which was
I'll let you summarize.
Their information as of last week was that Tom Volander was going back to school. Now, listening in the moment, I wasn't 100% sure if he meant going back to Boston to finish this semester, which we'd heard reported, or going back for next season to Boston University for his junior year and to play on the team and forgo going pro. I wasn't quite sure. Now, he said, well, you know, that's a lot of money for a player to be passing up. And that kind of led me to believe that, well, maybe he meant he was going back for next season for his junior year at BU. He also alluded to, and again, this report's out there from Rick Dhaliwal, that Tom Volander's in Sweden. He's practicing with the Swedish national team, might have the opportunity to play some exhibition games with them, maybe even be in the picture for the World Championships themselves coming up in May. But I wasn't quite certain if it was he's told us he's going back to school for his junior year, or he's back in Boston right now, or went back to Boston after the Frozen Four to finish classes. That didn't 100% track. And then Rick Dhaliwal had the response or more information from Volander's advisor, Todd Diamond, who says their intent was slash is to turn pro, but goes on to say if they can't agree to a contract that returning to BU might become a possibility, and kind of alludes to some other things that might be possibilities over the next several seasons as well, which I could take to mean playing pro in Europe potentially. So that's the update or the extra information from Todd Diamond, and you put it all together and like, did we learn anything new about where this stands, or are we still just in a stalemate?
We're still in a stalemate. If Tom Volander is going back to college, that would be a huge surprise to everyone in the Boston area, including BU coaches, right? Like there's you know, he leaving school at this point to go play with the national team is pretty telling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the stakes here are pretty simple, and the Canucks don't want to bend on the Schedule A's. That Zeev Bjugn, did you watch him play against Vegas last night, by the way? Looked pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
That deal with the max bonuses and with the burning the year, I mean, that's market value for a guy picked 12th, where Volander was picked 11th. Now, Bjugn has the production and the Hobie Baker hardware, but, you know, Volander has a Frozen Four appearance of his own, right-handed, huge, much bigger frame, much more pro-ready frame. They're comparable. And obviously, Volander's camp wants something that more closely approximates market value. I don't think they need the full Bjugn, but I think they're going to need more than what the Canucks are offering. The Canucks don't want to do it. And so, yeah, Volander's going to explore their options, and the Canucks are going to try and call his bluff and say, hey, look, like the real money here is not in the Schedule A bonus that you're not going to hit, most likely, but in making our team next year and spending three full seasons in the NHL, which we think you're capable of doing. What remains mystifying to me, like even today, to some extent, that's an opportunity to talk directly to the player. You know, like why miss it? Explain the vision. Why should he cave on these bonuses, which you know probably don't matter that much for either side?
Mm-hmm.
It's just bizarre now. It's just bizarre at this point.
It's a very strange situation. Very strange. And it feels like there's going to be a missed opportunity to get him in and play with Abichard. Could still happen. Could still happen if one side blinks, one side decides they want to get it done and they want that to happen. And look, hey, going if he does play for Sweden in the World Championships, that's a good developmental opportunity as well. But it's not under your organization. And that's what you want more than anything with these players when they're turning pro. You want to get them in, get them into your system, all of that in-house, and be able to guide their development from there and set him up to potentially impact your team and be a big part of your team going in to next season. So again, the Volander one, I don't know that we really learned anything. I guess I'm maybe slightly downgrading the chances I would give on him signing before next year, but only slightly. And it still feels like there's a deal to be done there. It's just whatever. Both sides are dug in, as far as we can tell, and one side is going to have to blink, one side is going to have to move a little bit here in order to get something done. So I would say those are kind of the more concrete things to cross off the list. There's some other interesting things as well. I mean, practice facility.
Yeah, let's keep going. We got to keep going.
We go a lot. Oh, no, don't worry. We're going. Now, I think the other topic, major topic of conversation.
Can I suggest a structure to get these out?
Sure.
Because we don't have a ton of time to at least hit them in the first segment.
I mean, we're going to go into things. Yeah, don't worry.
We'll vamp all show, but I do think, given that we've opened the whiteboard, we owe people a summary.
Sure.
And then they can come back and listen to more if they'd like. So let's do a core four roundup. A core four roundup and just like quickly.
Like core four topics or core four players?
Core four players. So JT Miller hung over this entire availability,
yes.
I thought.
Yeah.
They declined to elaborate on exactly what had occurred, but man, that was a lot of color about just how challenging this was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they even absolved JT Miller to some extent, saying he really worked to fix the issue.
Mm-hmm.
It just proved to be intractable. A lot of people in the organization were involved. I think you come out of that, you have to come out of that availability just being like, man, that was a lot worse probably than we've learned yet.
And I thought one of the most interesting things from Jim Rutherford was not so much about what happened between the players, because he didn't want to go into too much detail about that, but the timeline from when they decided it was untenable to when JT Miller actually got traded, right?
Yeah.
So he said, we got to the point that everyone in the organization felt it wasn't going to be resolved. We approached JT if he'd consider going to another team. He said he would. As time passed, JT was getting anxious, made it clear that he did want to be traded and would waive to go to the Rangers. But then he says, it wasn't just about him. All options were on the table. So what I read that to mean is, we decided it was going to be untenable. JT had the no trade protection, so we went to him and said, hey, if something comes up, would you be willing to waive? And he was like, sure.
To the Rangers.
Well, not necessarily. Because I read it was, in the interim, there was this period where they were exploring trades for JT Miller and Elias Pettersson.
That's what I read in.
Then JT Miller was like, hey guys, let's wrap this up. I'll go to the Rangers. And then they said, okay, we'll send you to the Rangers.
Yeah.
And I think that's you could probably have pieced roughly that timeline together anyways, just from some public commentary and reporting.
And the reporting, yeah.
But very interesting, and I thought it was very notable as well that he said, you know, it wasn't like we were just out there shopping JT. All options were on the table for us. But then he got anxious and we sent him to the Rangers.
Which brings us to the most qualified and conditional vote of confidence in the history of Vancouver sports. Right? The vote of confidence for Elias Pettersson,
yes.
Who's hit the gym two days in a row.
Well, or was it two? It was Saturday and today.
Oh, right.
Two non-consecutive days. Yeah. By the way, shout out to Leaf in the inbox for, he pointed out that it was, he's like, why is PD getting so much credit for two non-consecutive days working out?
I mean,
the non-consecutive days language cracked me up.
I deserve it too. If I work out in two non-consecutive days, I want a pat on the back. We believe in Pettersson, but he needs to be a more complete player.
Mm-hmm.
He'll always get his points. Will he?
Yeah, I didn't this year.
But he needs to buy in, needs to prepare differently.
Mm-hmm. Also, we're keeping our options open.
Also
stated multiple times.
And we'd be stupid not to keep our options
open. We are keeping our options open. Yeah, we believe in him, but hey, we're open. Teams, give us a call.
The Pettersson situation remains one of the most befuddling I've ever seen in my time in Vancouver, both because of the player's vacillation in form, but also just, I mean, what do you do with the problem? What do you do here? And is it even tenable? I mean, how many questions were pointedly asked about Pettersson?
Mm-hmm.
And only like a third of them were Bruff's. This situation remains beyond me. I don't know how it got to this point. I don't know how his form got to this point. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know what the issue is in terms of why he skates more slowly and shoots less hard than he used to, but we don't really see that happen to 26-year-old guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I come out of it just being like, man, that's exactly right. Like, we believe in him. It might be our best option. We how do you get a first-line center? Because you need a first-line center. Well, we need Petey to be our first-line center. Mm-hmm. I mean, this club knows how important he is to what they're trying to do, and yet you cannot possibly vouch for a guy in a more qualified way. If you were asking for, like, a recommendation about a buddy you were hanging out with or something, you know what I mean? Like, hey, is that guy, like, cool? And someone like was like, he's a good time, but
yeah,
you'd be like, I'm just going to cancel those plans.
Yeah. I was like, why, where are there all the caveats? What are you talking about?
What's going on here?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think we come out of that with more questions than answers on Elias Pettersson, which is, I think, par for the course with where the season is going.
And there, I will say, we'll get into this later in the show, but there were even like more layers of the management conversation around Pettersson added today that I thought.
100%.
Like, I thought there was even more stuff than just the standard, well, he's got to prepare better. So, I mean, they're like far from settling anything. It was very much as Patrick Ovechkin said,
injuries not an excuse.
Yeah.
I mean, what a
although
mess.
Rutherford did reference, like, well, maybe it was the injury. That's part of the reason he came in to, and then it was, well, guys play through tendonitis. And anyways, there's just so much there.
So wild.
Over and over and over to dig into with Pettersson.
And then Quinn Hughes.
Yes.
And look, we're not surprised. I mean, this is just admitting the obvious. People will treat it like it's huge news, but it's just admitting the obvious. We can't afford to lose Quinn Hughes. We're going to set ourselves up to have the money to keep Quinn Hughes, or at least to pay him the sort of contract that he's worth paying for. A little light tampering. Little bit of light tampering.
Just threw it in there.
Rutherford immediately being like, I probably already crossed
now,
the line.
He knows Devils GM Tom Fitzgerald, right, from Pittsburgh, so give him a call. Be like, hey, sorry about that, Tom.
Yeah, shoot him a text.
My bad.
You guys don't have anything big going on tomorrow, though, right? No, I mean, I think it was a clear joke.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a real expression of interest, and I don't think the league would view it that way, and I don't think the Devils would view it that way. So my guess is that we're not going to hear about fines or anything like this. That would be my strong suspicion. But it does front burner a story that was front burner anyway. I don't know. People are going to hand-wring and criticize, like, this brings pressure to the situation. It's like, sorry, like, I've been asking Quinn Hughes about playing with his brother since 2022, 2021. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, again, what are we talking about?
I thought it was very admirably direct and honest from Jim Rutherford. Like, the reason there is so much additional speculation about the future of Quinn Hughes, even more than a normal star player in a Canadian market, is because it doesn't just, as he said, it might not boil down to money for him. We can put the greatest offer financially in NHL history in front of Quinn Hughes, and it might not matter because he's got this extra factor that's out of our control.
Completely unique set of considerations.
And there's no point in dancing around that. That doesn't mean it's a done deal.
We
right?
also all understand
it's
it.
It's just something you have to acknowledge. It's like, this is unique. This is unique, and there's going to be unique pull for him to another city. We're not throwing up our hands and saying, and therefore we're screwed, but you have to be real about what you're dealing with in that situation. And I thought it was smart of Jim Rutherford to do so.
It's also just a heck of a clip. So thank you to the Vancouver Canucks for another season of content for us and for the rest of the league. There was so much to sift through. We'll keep doing it all show.
Jim Rutherford, man, what a legend. What an absolute legend.
It rocks, man. Honestly, it rocks. But I do think we come out of today, just to tie a bow back on it, I think we come out of today with the stakes very clearly set, right? If you were going into that presser looking for the sort of hollow hope and pablum that hockey teams often serve up, especially at the end of a disappointing season, that was absent. This was like a very critical, forthright, honest accounting of all the various conflagrations surrounding this club that they're going to need to manage. And I actually think in a lot of ways that shows a fair bit of respect for this hockey market, which I appreciated, even as I come out of it just being like, whoa, this is a critical summer for this hockey club.
And we will talk more about what's to come in that critical summer next. Send your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.